welcome to A Few Goldilocks Bears podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about things we love, things that we hate, and things in the middle. This could be things that we're indifferent about, that we're ambivalent about, that we're on the fence about. These are the gray areas of life. These are the things that aren't in the black and white, that they don't maintain to your precious polar opposites.
Hello, this is Vincent Cloud.
I'm John Emmett.
And I'm David Lauer.
And you know what? Let's start this off with a déjà vu. I say Dave goes.
I like it.
All right. This is a topic you guys have talked about before, but I have not talked about. And last week, I just watched the Grammys. And I don't like. I've never watched the Grammys like beginning to end. Like I watched the red carpet in the beginning and I watched the entirety of the show, and it was probably way too long, even though they cut off like half the awards and you only see like the stuff that really matters. But watching the Grammys is very interesting because like I've watched a lot of like the Academy Awards, the Oscars, but I've never watched the music version of it. And like, I kind of know why I don't watch the music version of it, because like, I'm not really into like the popular music of the day. I don't listen to Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Billie Eilish. I don't listen to any of that stuff. So as an outsider's perspective, like the Grammys was really interesting to me. There's some things I love, some things that I kind of hated. Like it's, you know, it's, there's that whole like it's a popularity contest, you know. It's like that's why Beyonce wins all the time, Taylor Swift wins all the time, and I get that. And it's that part is what it is. The part I really liked was the fact that they had the award for like the best new artist of the year, and they showed like the nominees for the best new artist of the year. Literally everyone who is nominated, like all seven of the artists, they all perform that night, and you get a live performance of the top seven nominees that are the best new artist of the year. So like I got to see all of these live performances of like Sabrina Carpenter, who I've heard her name before, but I had no idea what she sang. The song she sang, I thought it was actually a Taylor Swift song, but it was Sabrina Carpenter. And then there's like Benson Boone, a song that I had heard before. Like his performance was awesome. He like did a total front flip off of a piano and it like blew my mind and it was really interesting. And then there was, who else was there? Chapel Roan, who's wearing all this crazy makeup. She looked like someone from like, she looked like the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland, kind of like the craziest makeup you've ever seen. She's got couple really popular songs. I really like that I just kind of got like introduced to all these new artists that I really knew nothing about. And then they had like some older performances too. There was like Shakira. She did a performance. There was like Stevie Wonder was there along with Herbie Hancock, and they're
or at least that's what they told
school.
him,
Like,
that he
they're
was at the Grammys. Get it, he's blind.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, and like I didn't agree with like all the winners, obviously, but that's kind of how these shows are. You're generally not going to agree with the winners. But like I actually enjoyed it. I wasn't like, I thought I was going to hate it the entire time, but I didn't. I actually enjoyed it. Am I going to watch it next year? Maybe not. But I will look and see who's nominated for like the best new artists. And if I want to see their performances, I will definitely go watch it. I think I would actually want to watch this like on, don't watch it live, but like on a streaming service. That way I can skip through some of the stuff, because there's certain things I just don't care about. There is like the weird competitiveness. This will be the last thing I say on the topic. The weird competitiveness of some of the artists towards each other, because there's like Taylor Swift and Beyonce are like total, like they're the best in the business, the biggest stars there. Taylor Swift comes out to introduce the award for best country album. and Beyonce is nominated, and Beyonce won, like ends up winning it
Wow.
because Beyonce came out with a country album this year. But like Taylor Swift introduces it and she's like, "This is an award that I first won 15 years ago." And I was just like, "Oh," I'm like, "She's throwing it out there because Beyonce is probably gonna win." And that's exactly what happened. And it was like Taylor's like, "Yeah, I might not win it, but I won this 15 years ago, so it's no big deal to me." Like these like weird little underhand things. And then like Miley Cyrus came out and she introduced a category and she was like, "I should probably just say Beyonce wins it." And then just call it a day because I don't want to get on her bad side. And I don't know. It was like the little digs like that where you're like, oh, you can tell there's kind of a beef between some of the stars. So I enjoyed it. Yeah. Did you guys hear anything about this year's or what do you guys think about the Grammys?
We were kind of flipping through it. Like, so I saw the Chapel Roan speech. I thought that was interesting, like talking about like supporting the artists and stuff, like the same like artist versus record label disparity that's been going on since the dawn of the music industry, I think. You really got me thinking with the best new artist, like should other awards have that? Like, should there be an Oscar for the best debut film of a director, or that kind of thing?
Whoa.
It's an interesting thought because like just the whole idea of like new talent getting a specific reward, whereas like like with the Oscars, it tends to be like very career driven. Like a lot of times I'll be given an Oscar for like a career, even if the specific movie that it's been being given for isn't their best. So that's just
I feel like the
it's making me
closest
think.
thing to that is like the best original screenplay, where it's like it can't be a remake and it has to be like something that was originally written by them. I think that's, I mean, it's obviously it's a different thing, but it's something where it's like, okay, this has to be something new. It can't be a remake of an old movie or like based on a book or something like that.
It's really interesting that you picked Best New Artist as your example, for the Grammys, because that I think it still applies where that's kind of a curse. Like, you don't want to win that. A lot of people who have won that award don't go anywhere, or they have the sophomore slump afterwards and stuff. So I remember there was a shot of Billie Eilish in the crowd when she was nominated, and she was like, I hope I don't win this, when they were about to announce. Yeah, so that's a real thing.
Huh. I'd have to look that up. I'm curious what the stats are on that, like who the best new artist winners were and what they began came on to not accomplish.
I smell a future Deja few. Oh, and then with the Oscars though, like, how many directors do you think are coming up on the every year? And then what, like, how small can that list be? Maybe just two out of the five that de debuted,
Yeah, that's a good question. Like I guess it's yeah, there's probably more new people creating their first album every year than people directing their first movie.
Yeah, maybe it would have to be like a new acting debut, like an acting and then an actress. But like, and it couldn't be lead because you if you're a new actor, like you're not gonna get a lead. You're just gonna be a side role. So I don't know.
Sorry, this guy was an extra in a previous movie, so you're disqualified.
That's awesome. Yeah, those women though, as you mentioned, they've been cleaning up the Oscars as of late, and they are also the richest. So there has to be something there. That's not usually the case when it comes to the Oscars. Like, a lot of movies can make a shitload of money, but they won't even get nominated. So sometimes it happens, but for the most part, it's about the artistry, I'd say, when it comes to the Oscars. Should we get the show started? Hey. All right, well,
Yeah,
let's
so like we're talking about An award show that happens in the winter, but my mind is on the spring. The Rite of Spring, a work by Igor Stravinsky, and I love this orchestral work. I know it's a ballet. I've never seen the ballet, but I have listened to the music quite a bit. It came out in, I think, 1913, but it, in my opinion, it sounds very modern. Like it's very like at the time avant-garde, but just like it's very like brash and kind of harsh at times, and like I think very ahead of its time. I had remembered hearing a story about how the night it was debuted, like the audience just like revolted against it and like were super rowdy and like kind of rioted. I'm now, after researching a little bit for this, it seems like they might have been as upset about the actual ballet part of it, maybe even more so than the music. So that might be where that's coming from. But for some reason, like the first time I had heard it, it really made me think of like Jurassic Park. Like I think John Williams was like inspired by this for a lot of the music for that movie. But then I'm like, oh, I'm actually kind of conflating it because it in the movie Fantasia,
Yes.
this was the work that was used for the dinosaur segment. So I think it's both actually that. So like obviously I had dinosaurs on the brain for it, but also I think it was kind of an inspiration for John Williams and kind of many of his works actually.
Wow. Yeah, that was my first thought. Like when I first heard it, it starts off really tenderly and quiet and delicate, where I'm picturing like the seeds and then like a plant is growing. It's springtime, and they're trying to bloom, but then there's dangers of something. But then as soon as it hit its second part or the second chapter, I was like, oh, I heard this. This is Fantasia right here. So it was cool. And then I remembered all the the Stegosaurus fight and like seeing the creature crawl out of the water for the first time with legs and stuff, the Tyrannosaurus Rex, the eruptions, and then the dinosaurs in the mud. So this is all very good, and it does sound very modern. I could see why the audience would get all rowdy because this is close to to rock. It's very like full of attitude or it's angry at parts. So yeah, this
Yeah.
sounds like a rock thing. Yeah. What do you gotta say, Dave?
Yeah, I agree with it. It does seem like almost kind of rock in a way, because there's the way, like when they add something in, it's like intentional and it's like loud and it's like bam, there it is. And I like that about it, because it's I don't know, because you're listening to it and you're kind of like, okay, yeah, it like sets the tone with something and it kind of sets like a little bit of a mood. And then like bam, something hits and you're like, oh, and then they start into something else. And you're like, okay. And it's you do kind of feel like you're on a journey. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I liked what I heard, and I really enjoy listening to some music that doesn't have like lyrics and singing to it. When it's just instrumental, it's really good. It's kind of like it's very meditative, where you can kind of work on something or listen to it in the background, and it's just like because you're kind of doing the thoughts in your head, where you're kind of making your own lyrics or your own kind of thoughts to it. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Oh man, they say like have your baby listen to classical music. I wonder if someone put this on for a kid and the kid just starts to rock and headbang and try and break his crib out and stuff. That'd be great. Oh, I watched this though on YouTube. It was being performed live and it was like 35 minutes long. And I was like, man, like I remember almost all of this. But I guess they cut it down to 22 minutes in Fantasia. Because I'm thinking, like, man, that was a half an hour dedicated to the dinosaurs. I mean, I remember it being long, but I just wondered as a kid, I'm like, did it hold my interest for that long? But no, it didn't. 22 sweet minutes. Yeah. And I watched it. So again, I watched this live, and I don't even know how many people were in that band. Like, there were so many French horns, there was a lot of oh my, oboes, I want to say. I don't know, I really wanted to remember all those instruments, but it was very hard to. I was like, that's not a tuba, it's something else. Yeah, that was
Yeah, because
cool.
it, I mean, it was written for a full orchestra, like a full woodwind, full brass section, full percussion, strings, a couple dozen performers at least.
I thought of when I was watching the video, it's like, wouldn't that be great to just like just to be a musician but not in a rock band? With being in a rock band, you gotta drink and do drugs and smash hotel
Oh,
rooms.
what a hassle.
I know, but you don't there's none of that pressure when you're in a big band like that. I mean, I assume. Yeah.
Yeah, you go to the orchestra here and it's a lot of middle-aged people and
Yeah.
you're or older, like elderly people even. Can't imagine the parties are the same.
I feel like you definitely don't want to screw up if you're in an orchestra, because if you play a wrong note, you have, 40 people looking at you like it's your fault. They know.
Oh man. Good stuff. I'm curious though to see a ballerina done to that music, especially those more rockier parts. Like, what are they gonna do? I have no idea. I don't think I've also watched a ballerina before either, so yeah.
I saw the a performance of the Nutcracker one Christmas season. And I don't know, I really like the music from that, and I'm sure there's a lot of meaning to the specific movements and the dance and stuff, but I think most of that goes over my head.
They made the Nutcracker movie. Remember that with Macaulay Culkin? And there was all that ballerina in it. Even Macaulay danced. Yeah. For the
I do not
Nutcracker,
remember
anyways.
that.
Segue challenge.
Let's move on from the season of spring to the basketball season.
Which is.
Yeah, let's trade this topic for another trade, another topic. I really love the NBA trade deadline. So that's just happened like last week. The NBA trade deadline, it's unlike any other sport. It's not like football, it's not like baseball. It's a lot, probably because, in a basketball team, you only have five starters on the floor per team. It's kind of the way their collective bargaining agreement is between the players and the owners. They have very large salaries and their contracts are guaranteed. So, like, basketball has a long season. There's like 82 games, and it's probably like 65% of the way done right now. And this is when the trade deadline is. This is the last time before the season's over where you can trade this player for that player, this player for some draft picks. The NBA has the best trades because, like, first, there's 82 games in the season, so a lot of these games kind of become pointless, and everybody's just waiting for the actual playoffs to start, and that's when it really matters, is the playoffs. So the games are not super important. You're kind of just like projecting your team, like, how are we going to do in the playoffs? So you want to have the best roster available, and you've had enough time in the season where you're like, okay, we know what our roster is, we know what our weaknesses are, we know what our strengths are. And the teams that have like all-star players, they want to get another star player on their team. That's, sometimes they need a guy who's really good at shooting, who's a smaller guard. Sometimes you want a big guy, who's 7 feet tall and can play defense or rebound. But there's always like interesting trades. This year, one of the craziest trades ever happened, where the Dallas Mavericks traded Luka Doncic to the LA Lakers for Anthony Davis and one draft pick and another player. And it's one of the craziest trades ever because it's such a lopsided trade and it's just a terrible business decision. Like, it's such a bad trade because Luka Doncic he's 25 years old. He's just entering his prime as a player. Your prime is kind of age 26 to 30. He's just entering his prime, and they trade him away for a guy who's 31, who has an injury history. Like, he's a really good player, but he's definitely a level below Luka Doncic. And Luka just got the Mavericks to the NBA Finals last year. They were in the finals. They need to add one more player to help him out to win the title, but instead they just got rid of him. And so it's super interesting because they're not my team. If I was a fan of the Mavericks, I would just be so devastated. But it's really weird because it's such a lopsided trade that there's conspiracy theories going on about it. Like, did the owners from the Dallas Mavericks have a handshake deal with the owners from the Lakers? Like, to do this lopsided deal, why would you give away your best player? And also, it's like the general managers of both teams kind of know each other. They used to work with each other 5 years ago. So there's kind of conspiracy theories. Apparently Dallas's owners, they want to have a casino right next to their stadium in Dallas, but the government, they only hand out a gambling license once every 2 years, and they got denied. So now the Dallas Mavericks owners are trading away the best player to be like, hey, if you guys aren't gonna give us our casino license,
What?
we're gonna trade away our best player, and then we'll just move our team to Las Vegas. Like, apparently there's rumblings of weird stuff like that where they might
The
try to
old
move the
major
team.
league strategy.
Yeah. I don't know. And it just doesn't make any sense. And the thing is, the injury prone player that they traded their star player for, one game or two games, he's already hurt and they think he's done for the year. Like, that's why you shouldn't have made this trade. And it's just mind-blowing, how bad of a trade this is. Yeah, I don't it's and it's just the weird thing about the NBA is the trades are more interesting than the games themselves. I don't even enjoy watching the actual games, but all of the trade rumors and oh, this guy's gonna get swapped to this team and now these players will play together. And it's just there's constantly these millionaire star players who are unhappy with their situation, and then they just go from playing for one team to another, and guys just get traded every year. It's insane.
Is that what Sep you said this is different from how MLB does things in the NFL? Like, is it because just 1 year contracts, then they leave? Because it seems like NFL, it's like multi-year contracts, right?
Yeah, and in the NBA they have multi-year contracts too, but it's the players just have so much leverage. And it's kind of to do with their collective bargaining agreement, but also they just have leverage because if they're unhappy and they choose to just not play well, they can do that and force the team to trade them because they're like, if you don't trade me, I'm just going to half-ass it and not perform, and there's you have to trade me. So there's certain guys like Jimmy Butler who just got traded from Miami to the Warriors. He's demanded trades to go from Minnesota to Philadelphia to Chicago to Miami. He's played everywhere because he'll play for a year or two and then he'll get upset and then he'll just decide he's just going to be an a-hole, and then they're forced to trade him. But the thing is, if they're happy and you can kind of keep them playing to their full potential, they're phenomenal players. So you have to kind of take a risk and be like, hey, I think we got a good situation here. We got good guys that will fit and work with you. And it's a really weird dynamic in basketball.
Yeah, I was trying to look this up to, as a non-NBA fan, like, what are some opinions I might have about this? And yeah, I guess I just struggled to understand like how it's different from other sports in a way that might be controversial.
But you didn't
Because, well,
spot anything?
in other sports, the players getting traded are never the best players in the league. Like, you would never have a top three player in the NFL. They would never get traded. Like, unless there was something like totally crazy that happened where they got arrested and like suspended or like hurt and out for the year. Like, in the NBA, like LeBron James can trade teams, or Kevin Durant can get traded. Luka Doncic got traded. Like, in the NFL, like, Patrick Mahomes plays for the Chiefs. He's going to play there forever. Like, Aaron Rodgers only got traded at like the end of his career when he's like 40 years old and he's basically washed up at this point. So that's why the NBA is kind of crazy, is like the magnitude of the players and how good they are suddenly getting traded. It's just insane.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's interesting, 'cause yeah, I remember like LeBron going away from Cleveland was like a huge deal, right? Was it Cleveland? Like his hometown or whatever. So in general, do NBA players not have as much of like an association with a specific team as like NFL players do?
Generally not. Like, there's always like multiple teams. Like, that's why like with LeBron, he went from Cleveland to Miami, back to Cleveland, then to LA with the Lakers. Kevin Durant, who's a top player, he went from Oklahoma City to, he played for the Nets, he's played for the Suns, he's played for the Warriors. Like, a lot of guys always dance around. There's very few guys who just stay with one team. I think like Tim Duncan or Kobe Bryant, those are like the big name guys who have always stuck with one team. But generally, guys will switch teams, and it's really happened all because of LeBron James. He kind of set the standard for it, where he's like, if my team's not good, why don't I just call up a bunch of my basketball friends behind the scenes and all make a handshake deal and be like, hey, let's all go play in Miami. Like, Chris Bosh, come over here and play here. And we'll just get all of our, we'll work behind the scenes. And like, that's kind of that they have like agencies who's like your sports agent. Well, these agencies have gotten so big where they get certain players, and these players like all are for this agency, and they will work together to help other players in their agency to get on certain teams together. It's like a secondary, because they already have like their union, their players union, but then there's like their agency, which is like another kind of union where guys like work together to get on the teams that they want to play for. It's very strange.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the fact that it's more recent, because you think of Michael Jordan being synonymous with the Bulls, or I do anyway. Maybe he wasn't always,
Wait
but
a minute, did he go to the Wizards or some shit later
yeah,
on?
he retired after 98, and then he didn't play in 99, and then in like, yeah, the year 2000, he went and played for the Wizards. And I think he even bought like part ownership in the team, like he owned a stake in the team.
Did oh my gosh, Jordan had so much sway that he changed sports. Remember, he played baseball for a little bit. He's like, "Can I just want to do this for a little bit." Did he do that for like one season or some shit? And then he's like, "I'm over it."
For like 1.5 seasons. Yeah. And like 93, and then like half a 94, I think. Or maybe a 94 and half a 95 or something like that.
Sounds like a Renaissance man to me, and I love him.
Yeah, and then he helped Bugs Bunny and the gang defeat those aliens.
And then he brought
Yeah.
back the Hitler mustache.
Oh. Yeah,
Anyways.
everyone always talks about MJ having 6 championships, but they're neglecting the Space Jam championship. I'm like, come on. It's probably the most important of them all.
Segway challenge. We already mentioned trading stuff. I hear spoilers topic has more money, so go there. I don't know. All right, well, let's talk about my hate. And it's spoilers. So I hate coming across these. Either someone will straight up say the spoiler online or something like that. Or you watch a movie trailer and they give away key scenes, or at least you see these scenes, these scenarios, and then you already build the movie in your head. And you're like, well, this scene looks like a final confrontation because he's already bloodied and stuff. So that has to be later in the movie. So you know that scene, other scenes before that means he's not going to die from this. I mean, typically he's the lead, but still, like you'll see stuff. I have to say, for the challenge trailers, if you love MTV The Challenge, their trailers are spoiler filled. It's crazy. And especially with a show where you have eliminations between people to see who continues on to the next episode of the season, with every episode, then you could come up with how the sh season's going to shake out just by those images. This is brought up because I was watching Twin Peaks, and I'm like, oh my God, I love this. And so when you type it into YouTube, and then YouTube, the algorithm, it starts popping up stuff for you, and it's like this actor, how this actor responded to knowing that they killed Sarah, Laura Palmer.
Oh, so you just saw that like in the titles of the YouTube
Yes, and
videos?
they showed three actors talking, and I quickly looked away. I'm like, no. Okay, I don't know that name, but I think I know one of those actors. And I just
Okay.
started to figure it out. I'm like, no. And I tried my hardest to just kind of I think I quickly turned on something else just to get absorbed in that. But that's that, my mind will still make, I have a very good memory, almost annoyingly so, where I don't want to think about certain things, but no, the memory is like, oh, remember this means this and that means that. So I figured out who killed Laurel Palmer before the reveal. It sucked. And, but there's these other versions I just wanted to throw out there. Watching UFC on the website, they would have fights, and it would say, this person versus this person, right? And for the most part, I mean, the way it's written down is how they come out in the fights. You have the red corner first, followed by the blue corner, right? Blue corner comes out first, and then red corner comes out last because they're usually the A-lister or whatever, So I was watching these UFC fights, and I'm like, oh, I love these. And then I started to notice where I'm like, hey, why is this actor listed first when he came out as a blue corner? That's not right. I found out that they listed it winners versus losers.
That's really dumb.
Yes, it ruined so many fights. And after a while, I was just like, okay, maybe if I block it from my view and I click on the picture, but that was devastating to me. Yeah, what do you guys have to say about spoilers?
I hate him too. Like when I am watching a movie or like gonna read a book or whatever, like I want to know as little as possible, like basically, like, oh, I know the name of the thing, and I know that my friend said I would probably like it. So that, that's my ideal, what I know about it going into it. Sports is a whole another level. Like, it just feels not even worth watching if you know how it ends. Like at that point, you're like, okay, well, I'll just watch like a highlights reel because like there's no suspense anymore. There's also like trolls on the internet who purposely spoil things. I remember like when Harry Potter was big, there you couldn't go on the internet without seeing, like this character kills this other character, which is like a big surprise in the thing, and like that. That's just unnecessary behavior.
So like I hate spoilers. The biggest like spoiler was like with Game of Thrones. I was a huge Game of Thrones fan, but I never read the books. And all the people who read the books would just spoil stuff, like up until like the fifth season. And then the show is past like what has been written. But I remember hearing about like Joffrey, like knowing what his fate will be and how in like hearing like that's gonna happen, I'm like, oh, okay. And it made me not even want to watch like the season. And I was just like, okay, just get to this episode. I already know what his fate is. Anytime I would see a scene with him, like I was checked out because I'm like, I know what happens to you. Like
Wow.
I don't care about this anymore. And then it wasn't until like after he died, then I was like, okay, now I can enjoy the show again because I'm like, but I have to like avoid spoilers from here on out and hope that like it doesn't happen again. And I was gonna mention the same thing about the UFC. I went to like ESPN's website and they will tell you if a UFC event is going on, if you like go to their website on your phone on a Saturday night at like 10 p.m. when there's a pay-per-view going on, they will just flat out tell you like who won the fight. Like by knockout or submission in the second round, first round, they tell you that. And it's like, you guys realize you have an app that you're asking people to subscribe to ESPN Plus for $10 a month. And then you want us to pay an $80 pay-per-view charge. But you just spoiled it. So why would I pay you money to watch something you just spoiled? Like, think of that business model. Like, it's so stupid. Like, it makes no sense. Because it's like, well, you already spoiled who won it. Like, maybe I work overnights on a Saturday night and I don't want to get spoiled. Like, maybe I just want to check the score of the Timberwolves game and I don't want to know the score, like, or like see who won the fight. I don't know. It's maddening. Yeah, with like, I'm like John. Like, I want to know nothing about the TV show or the movie. Just like, I want to go in and it's like, what's the name of the movie? I'll watch something streaming. And by the time I start watching it, I forget what the name of it is. My wife would be like, what's the name of this? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't want to read the description to the movie. Like, I saw like the little trailer. I won't ever watch the full trailer. I'll just watch like 5 or 6 seconds of it. And I'd be like, okay. I'm like, I know that actor. I know that actor. This will be good. I'll watch it. Like, I don't need to know anything more. I'm like, I'm not going to sit and watch like the 30 second trailer because even in the 30 seconds, they're going to show me a scene from like near the end of the movie. And it's like, it's going to be stuck in my head.
You
I.
mentioned Game of Thrones, like spoilers for that were so unavoidable, but like I waited so long to start watching it that they all just went in one ear and out the other because it's like all these like goofy names and stuff that meant nothing to me. So I'm like, oh yeah, whatever happened to whoever. And by the time I finally got around to watching it, like I didn't remember any of the spoilers anymore, which was nice.
It really sucks for like movies where their whole twist or whatever is so ingrained in pop culture that you just grew up hearing it, like Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, you'll hear the quote, Citizen Kane, like the big mystery, they'll just throw it out casually. I've done that. I did that in a Suncoast. And I think Seth was working. He's like, shh, because like the woman was looking at a cover, covering a copy. And then,
Like the
okay.
movie Signs.
Yeah?
Like, I see dead people. Like, I've never watched the movie
No,
because.
The Sixth Sense.
Or, oh,
Actually,
yeah,
shit,
Sixth Sense.
I should have said Signs so that, yeah, you get it wrong. Oh, damn it.
Yeah, Sixth Sense. Yeah, like, I don't know. Once you know the plot of the movie, you're just like, oh, okay. It's pointless to watch at that point.
I would say watch it though. Sixth Sense is still very good, I think, even given the twist.
Yeah, because a lot of movies have a twist, and then you're like, oh, they did not earn that twist. But The Sixth Sense does. And it's like worth a second watch after knowing it just to see how, like, oh, wow, okay, they actually pulled this off very well.
Okay, so I do have to mention this because I was so livid. This was a good year, maybe 2 years before The Dark Knight Rises came out. And so they on IMDb, they were like, "Oh, this actor is cast in this new movie." And they were like, "Marion Cotillard as blank." And I don't want to reveal it, but that is a big reveal in the movie. Like at the very end, they're like, "Oh," and I'm probably just giving it away just by saying that, but like I couldn't believe it because I already figured out what that means. So yeah, like Dark Knight Rises really was hurt a little bit for me because I knew that there was this twist, because Christopher Nolan puts a twist in every one of his movies. He's the more successful M. Night, you know? Yeah. Anyways, anything
Even
else about
knowing
Spider-Man?
there's a twist in a movie is a spoiler.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, I felt that way about Harvey Dent, because Harvey Dent becomes Two-Face. But when you're watching the movie, like, you shouldn't know that. Like, because like that scene is supposed to be like a shocker, like, oh my gosh, he's Two-Face and his face is so deformed. But like, you know it. Like, I don't know. That was a very strange, like with Two-Face, it just didn't make sense to me because I'm like, it's impossible not to be spoiled and to not see this coming.
Well, to be fair, in the first Batman movie with Tim Robbins, they cast Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent, but he didn't change in that movie. He was supposed to do that in the third, but then they're like, get Tommy Lee Jones in there. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And Billy Dee was pissed, rightfully so. But I think he still got paid to do it or something like that. Or I don't know, something weird.
Oh yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. You know, we don't have to come up with an ending. We could just cut. We could have cut 5 minutes ago and we'll never know till it happens. All right. So I guess that's it, huh? Should we stop it? Unless you guys have more about spoilers.
So it's not an ending anymore, like the
Oh,
outro.
should there
I
be an
don't know.
outro? Let's just record one, right? So that's the show. So that's the show. Like, subscribe, comment if you're on YouTube. I don't know why I keep bringing that up. I was Vincent Cloud.
Go to www.afewgoldilockbears.com, click on where to listen, how to listen, when to listen. They're
Why
not
to
going to tell you
listen?
when to listen. I was John Nimitz.
All right, and I was Dave. Thanks for listening.